I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Hello and welcome to The Worst Idea of All Time, Season 4, Episode 10. Tim Batt is me.
And I'm Guy Montgomery. And it's a beautiful autumn or fall evening here in Brooklyn, New York City, 5:44 p.m. Pleasure to be on the line with you, Tim.
I'm drinking out of a Pay the Boys cup. We've a little sneak behind the curtain, guys. We're using a brand new thing to record today, so hopefully it doesn't sound like fucking ear pus.
I can only imagine the percentage of listeners who are as excited as you are by the new technology we're using and the minor but still noticeable fluctuations in audio quality that are pouring out into ears across the nation, the hemisphere, the globe. The universe?
Ears Across America. That will be our new project. We're going to revisit the, what was that thing called? Was that Hands Across America? That big project where everyone linked arms?
I think you're thinking of Wild Hogs, the movie where four fellas get on some hogs and just drive them across America.
I mean, it couldn't be more different at all, really.
I think you're misremembering, you know, Wild Hogs.
Yeah.
Remember the stars of Wild Hogs? Can you tell me?
John Travolta, Tim Allen.
Yeah.
There's a wild card in there. Is it William H. Macy?
Correct.
Yes. And there's, I think, a fourth guy on a bike, isn't there? Or is it those three?
No, there's one more.
Oh. Nah, I don't know.
Lawrence. You.
A real four tent pole appeal at the cinema, at the Cineplex.
Did you see it?
I did not. I've never seen that. I'm sorry for sniffing as well. It's a disgusting thing to do on a microphone. I've had a touch of laryngitis.
Ah, well, do you know what's not disgusting? It's telling everyone that you've had a touch of laryngitis. It's actually quite becoming on you.
I literally cannot even tell where the line of sarcasm is with you anymore, Guy. I don't know if we're spending too much time together or not enough, but the line is blurry.
I've never thought of it like this before, but someone must have made a joke. It's quite becoming on you, or I becoming on. Do you know what's quite becoming?
I becoming on you.
Me, and then I come on you.
Yeah, it's a good gag.
Yeah, put
it's
it together.
Very funny stuff.
Someone tidy that up for me, please.
Yeah, if we could get that into the writers' room. That would be wonderful. And then when it comes time to do the actual episode of the podcast, that's going to be a real humdinger of a line. Hey, guess what?
What?
I interrupted your Wild Hogs bit. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen Wild Hogs.
Great, then we'll move forward. I got to watch the movie with a human being by my side.
Oh, my God. Well, can I tell you, I actually had that revealed to me via email with said human being.
What? Why?
What? A man can't email another man's wife anymore, Tim? This is PC gone mad. This is what really shits me about PC culture. I can't send tasteful images to Zoe anymore because she's your betrothed. Well, guess what? That's bullshit. If I want to send semi-nudes to people who are married, who are engaged, or in any other sort of relationship, I'm going to do it. They're good photos. People need to see them.
You've genuinely caught me on the hop here, Montgomery. I'm not sure what dastardly plan you've been cooking up communicating with my wife in the last 12 hours, but I respect it, and I respect both of you, and most importantly, I respect privacy. So I shan't investigate that at all.
I respect that. And if you could please not bring it up with Zoe, that would mean a lot. I've been sworn to secrecy.
Jesus. Very good. So anyway, I got to watch the movie with Zoe, which Guy knows. See, ordinarily you get to act as audience surrogate because you don't have information.
Yeah,
so me revealing it to you, you get to react in a way that the listeners would feel, you know?
I'm sick and tired of being pegged as the one who doesn't have information.
Don't understand how you had this information.
I told you, Zoe and I are in a regular and ongoing email correspondence, which features but is not limited to semi-explicit images of me. Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it feels like a one-way thing, that transfer of images. I'm going to mute the microphone while I blow my nose, but know what I'm doing, Guy.
I do. I know exactly what you're doing. We also exchange some of the amateur poetry we've both been working on, but I guess you don't show curiosity in that because that's the feeling I get from reading the emails.
I would love recipes. To hear one of your poems, please.
You know, ways to make good gluten homemade pasta. Yeah, here's my secret, Tim. The gluten's where all the flavor is.
Isn't pasta all gluten?
Not the stuff that Zoe and I are making. But again, I suppose you're not curious in that. You're probably not curious about the gluten-free haiku she wrote for you last week, are you? You were too busy.
You literally talked over me asking you for a poem. That's how interested I was, but you were too hot on your high horse to notice.
Yeah,
just endemic of a poor miscommunication in a relationship, eh?
Gluten-free pasta. This stuff tastes almost like pasta, but not quite as good. There's a gluten-free haiku for you.
Very good. I loved it, man. Snaps.
No worries. Well, Tim, I envy you watching the movie with a person. I really do. How did Zoe enjoy it? How did you enjoy it?
Zoe actually, she was all right with it. She enjoyed it. I think at the closing credits, she even said, "No, that wasn't so bad. I think you guys are going to be okay." And I said, "I don't think you understand the project."
That's very supportive of her, though.
Very supportive.
Did it change your viewing experience, I imagine, for the better?
Oh, absolutely. By factors, it was so good. I mean, from here on in, because we're in the double digits now, I'm going to be resorting to alcohol.
Oh, to get me through. I see. Also, you know, company.
Yeah, alcohol is the people of drinks. Have you heard that before?
I've not, but it makes some sense to me.
Mm. Can I share some things that Zoe had to say about the movie? Look at her stupid bag. And I didn't even notice this, but Carrie, at the start when you're going around apartment shopping, her and Big, she's got a bag that is in the shape of the Eiffel Tower. Have you ever seen that?
I have not seen that, and I don't doubt that it's stupid. I actually look forward to looking out for it next week or next watch, whenever that is. But it does not surprise me that Carrie would be carrying around something stupid.
The Eiffel Tower itself, just with like a handle jammed in the top.
Look, before we continue, I'd like to tell you something, Tim.
I'd love to hear it, Guy.
I did something that I thought would be funny this week. And it wasn't.
Spanish? Did you watch it in Spanish?
I watched the movie Sex in the City 2.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Guy, let's get into it.
I kind of just wanted to see, you know, with continuity, how that movie stacked up, whether or not it changed the viewing experience.
Sure.
You know, I wanted to draw lines between the characters, you know, the endpoints of their stories in the first film and where they're picked up in the second.
Yeah,
and I've written here in my notes, and this came not long after Dixpert showed up.
Yeah,
I've written this movie is fucking insane. 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 This movie is fucking insane.
I prefer your haikus, to be honest. It just didn't really take me anywhere, that one.
Well, I think it actually took you to a pretty accurate representation of what it was like watching Sex and the City 2. Tim, time has not been kind to that movie, and
in terms of what?
I would describe it as necessary.
Like your relationship to it or society's?
Both. But there was no... it was like the movie was taunting me at one point. You know when that guy sings "It Feels Like the First Time" in karaoke? You'd think...
Oh, yeah. After whenever I'm muted, by the way, I'm just coughing my lungs out. Sorry, but yes, I remember that scene.
It does not feel like the first time. It's you know, I carry every one of my watches with me. And it didn't really give me much at all in the way of exposition. I don't have a lot to report to you from it. I mean, if anything, it just drove a further wedge in mine and Carrie's relationship. She is the most entitled person. Everything is about her. It's always wanting it her own way. There's no consideration for anyone else in the world. She makes Big look sort of like a considerate and empathetic character. And Big is also a lunatic.
In what way is he a lunatic?
I think first of all, the man has no computer in his office, as well you recall.
Yeah.
He's just scheming ideas all the time in the hopes that one of them takes seed. And he pitches straight-faced to his wife without any comprehension or understanding this might not be an incredibly well-received idea, that they spend, you know, two days of every week apart so they can just do whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah. Not a great move.
I mean, within the context of the film, like, I think in broader logical terms, it's not a great move. But I was pretty empathetic towards him wanting that when I was watching the movie. Carrie does not treat, like, she's like a petulant child. Everything has to be her way or it's not on. Is she like that in the first movie?
Sorry?
Is she like that in the first movie?
Guy, you've seen it 9 times. I'll tell you, on her performance last night, she's definitely a lot more of a sympathetic character in the first movie. I don't need to tell you that, but she's far from perfect and far from my favorite. In fact, quite probably bottom of the heap of the 4 gals. 5 if you count the city.
Can you give me your current power rankings from 1 through 4?
I would love to. Samantha is occupying the penthouse, that top spot. Okay. She, I think, will be unmovable as the season goes on. She's in an unassailable position. She's a woman who knows what she wants. She's not afraid to go and get it. She loves her friends. She calls it how it is. I mean, what's not to love about this character? Larger than life, fun-loving. She loves to fuck, and both in a very literal and sort of a metaphysical sense. I'm going to put
actually
Miranda.
I'm very interested to hear this, but as a quick aside, I'd like to say one element of continuity between the two movies. I love the way that Samantha and Smith Jarrett's relationship picks right back up. Like,
yes,
you know, that breakup looks pretty.
But it's a friendship in the second one, right?
Yeah, yeah. But so that's what I'm saying. Like the breakup in the first movie, he takes it so well. And it's sort of like, yeah, okay. And then that leads brilliantly into their friendship in the second movie where he's like, I'm doing this movie. It's premiering in New York. I want you to be on the red carpet with me. And it's a joy to watch. And honestly, it's nice to see a sort of, you know, a logical progression or at least like it feels like a tidy line between the two films in that respect.
And there's a lot of ways to post break up with someone, you know, like what your relationship is after you break up with someone. I'm a generally speaking big believer in the clean break sort of approach. But what a wonderful adult way of treating another human being that you part ways. You go, you know what, this relationship isn't working. We accept that we love each other, but this ain't the thing. And then you take some time out and then eventually you can be such good pals that you go and fly to the Middle East to hang out with the other one. What a cool
They don't quite hang out in the Middle East. He calls from the Middle East. Remember, he's shooting that movie poster, which couldn't have been done on green screen.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You did right. Yes. Man, it's amazing what I can forget. I actually just had a conversation about this. Who was I talking to? Someone. They were asking me some questions. Befittingly. We was at a party.
It was a very recent installation last week. Talking about those.
Isn't it? And they were like asking me a couple of questions about grown-ups too. And I was like, yeah, I think, oh, they said, do you know who I was talking to? It was Joseph Moore of Walkout Boys fame. I was having a beer with him just yesterday. And he was like, does David Spade is he one of the dads in grown-ups too? Does he have a son? And I was like, the fuck is his? And it took me a moment to remember that Brayden is his spawn, but he doesn't know it. So he like is presented as the bachelor. But in fact, he is one of the dads.
That's right. It's a big and comical reveal. Well, I would say, I'd imagine Grown Ups 2, I think your memory of Sex and City 2, it's sort of, I would think of it as like a song, Tim, where if you tried consciously to think of the lyrics and the melody, you know, you might be forcing your hand too hard and it won't come. But if it occurred to you naturally, or it was on in the background,
I'd sing along to the chorus.
I think you'd be surprised, because I was, I was sort of finishing a few sandwiches lines along with something else. Yeah, and I actually did also have I had a little egg sandwich as well. Love so it. Your instincts are sound,
man. So were you just watching Sex and the City 2 by yourself?
Yeah, that's what I did this afternoon.
God, you're breaking my heart.
As it's a lean 2.5 hours. And can I say, the more I watch this movie, the faster it goes by. It is incredible how quickly 2.5 hours can go by if you've seen the source material over 55 times. Now, Tim, before I drive myself any more insane by continuing to talk about the experience, could you please tell me who's living beneath Samantha on the second highest story of this apartment building that you are constructing?
I think it is Charlotte. I mean,
I think you mumbled the word Miranda before.
That sentence was, and I know that piqued your interest. I was talking to Zoe last night. I was saying, Guy really self-identifies as Miranda, and I'm not quite on board with it. Like, I don't fully buy him being Miranda.
And what did Zoe say?
She was a Miranda. Hey,
what did Zoe say
about you?
Yeah.
She said, what do you think Guy is? And I said, I think Guy is a Samantha.
That's a very kind thing of you to say, given what we know about your relationship to Samantha at this point.
Mate, I got a lot of time for Guy Montgomery. I got a lot of time for Samantha Jones. Samantha Jones. It's a good name.
Fuck Clinic.
The Samantha Jones Fuck Clinic is where the third movie needs to go. We know that there's been a spat between Kim Cattrall and Sarah Jessica Parker, but I think the way to bait the hook with a little bit of honey to get the flies, if you follow me in fishing analogies, you plebs, then you'll know that Sarah Jessica Parker needs to have a little restraint from having Carrie so, all-consuming of the storyline, as is usual in these productions, and give a little screen time to Samantha Jones's Fuck Clinic, which is the subtitle of Sex and the City 3.
It feels Samantha to me like
gets a medical degree and starts a clinic.
There's no doubting this concept has legs, Tim. And you know, as through all the second movie, she is very concentrated on sort of maintaining her libido through menopause. And by the end of the film, we're all very happy to see that it's still right up there. But before we go throwing money around for an entire feature, I think I'd like to see this as a web series, maybe. I think you could have a lot of fun, just, you know, client by client, just a little proof of concept before we go diving into another two and a half hours. I mean, I imagine that the third movie would have to be longer still. Sex and the City 3, (hours), Samantha Jones, (Fuck Clinic), the second parenthesis.
Yeah, you've got it. We're changing cinema. You've seen 3D come and go. Fuck that. It's time for the reign of the 3-hour movies again. It'll be like Ben-Hur, but for fucking. And do you want to know what the tension is in the plot?
Yeah.
Big is funding it, but without telling Carrie.
It's his idea?
No, he's the funder. You know how he's a New York financier? Well, this is his latest investment. And he hasn't told Carrie because they've recently had a little bit of a falling out, which mirrors their off-screen relationship. So it's kind of got this meta-analysis of how Kim and Sarah are sort of interacting with each other. Yes?
I can also imagine a world where, because Carrie taunts Samantha for being older in Sex and the City 2. She says, women who are not our age should not say women our age. You'll remember in the first film, of course, they toast to Samantha turning 50.
Yeah.
So I think what we're looking at here is maybe a dip in the, the sexual chemistry, something that Carrie is notoriously evasive in talking about, except through disgustingly dripping wet innuendo. We see a dip in their mutual sex drive. We see Big turn to Samantha, who for whatever reason has had a falling out with Carrie, as you've described.
Yeah.
Maybe she helps remotivate him to get his fuck back on with Carrie. He says, well, that really made a difference. That's what motivates him to give her the money to fund the fuck clinic. And I love the idea of this sort of secret, because on one hand, Carrie will be so happy that the spark is back in their relationship. But on the other hand, the secret, you know, this dark cloud hangs over that rekindling of love, and that Big feels he can never reveal to her the source of the rediscovered chemistry.
It was the biggest idea of all, wasn't it? Back your friend who you've had a falling out with, fuck clinic, but it will also save your marriage. Can I say as well, because you referenced that moment where Carrie is being very evasive about precisely how much sex her and her husband having, or that husband-to-be, but she does say that Big really colours within the lines. Zoe, when that bit came on, just said, oh. she read that line, and I was happy to get a female perspective on it. She read that line exactly how we did. Now, I hope I'm not breaking her confidence by sharing this quote, but she said, what, is he just like jizzing everywhere or what?
I couldn't agree more. And do you know what also gets me is, I can't remember if it's immediately after or not long after that scene when she goes home and Big is playing Enya, or I don't know, maybe Enya's stepbrother's band. He's left he looks disheveled. He's got the, you know, doors open to the balcony, lit candles in there everywhere.
Yeah.
And she goes home and it's just like, it's on.
Yeah. He passionately embraces her on the balcony and they hook up.
You know, which is obviously one of the moments of chemistry that they'll be thinking of when they are, you know, trapped in their sexless marriage a few years down the line ahead of Sex and the City 3, Samantha Jones, fuck clinic, ;
So much punctuation.
But the thing of it is that really, I find that disgusting, I think, because it's so hot on the heels of her being like, he really colours within the lines. And that's like, I guess, meant to be organic sexual energy, because it sort of comes out of nowhere. There's no occasion, there's no reason for them to be so horny. She gets home, he's obviously like, we're going to fuck nice tonight, and she's all in.
we're going to fuck nice tonight. I like that. That's a good pickup line.
Tragically, that line got left on the cutting room floor. And he's got candles everywhere, which is a classy touch. And then also Miranda and Steve have their, which is such a steamy scene when they reunite, and Carrie goes, and Miranda never looked back, sort of meant to be referring to her and Steve putting the past behind them and moving on with their marriage.
Yeah.
But then there's a scene of them, like, you know, in a passionate, sort of almost, there's a position I might have tried, but I'm not entirely familiar with.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Both on their knees, and he's behind her, and he's got his arm around her breasts.
I feel like it's sort of in the first third of the Kama Sutra. It's not a default position for lovemaking, but
it looks like they're really working. It looks like a good time, if I'm being completely honest.
Absolutely. It's not crazy, but it's good for camera. I thought it was a fucking great decision in terms of sexual positions to go for camera, because they're both facing, we get to see both of their faces. They're both presumably fully naked, and they're both facing the light, facing the camera. That's so, from that point of view, well done.
You see both their faces, but it's quite, they both have equal amounts of hand and control in that sexual position. You know, it's not like if you've got Carrie saying, Miranda never looked back again, well, almost never, and cut to doggy style, you're like, well, I don't know that this is going to, this feels sort of,
it's communicating the wrong thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But they're also surrounded by candles. I don't know that I've ever...
We got to get a new name for that, really, don't we?
I don't know that I've ever made love surrounded by candles.
Oh, guy.
You mean to tell me you have?
I would like to think at least once at some point. I mean, I couldn't remember a conversation I had with Joseph Moore yesterday, moments ago. So I'm just chalking it up to, I assume I have at some point.
Nah, if you have to think about it, it means you haven't. Unless maybe you've had so much sex with candles it sort of faded into the recesses of your mind.
I've definitely had sex with candles on and in the room. I guess my only quibble is what you mean by surrounded by.
Just like enough that if someone came in, not necessarily during, but afterwards, if you both had to go and do something and you forgot to blow out the candles, if someone came in and they're like, whoa, you know, three's probably not enough, but they came in and they're like, whoa, that's quite a lot of candles.
What's the line? How many candles is enough candles for this? I feel like it's a half dozen.
Yeah, I was thinking eight, so we'll call it seven.
Cool.
Although that would really do my head in having seven candles. I feel like I'd want either an even number or five or multiples of five.
Really?
Yeah. One thing that's really cool about me, Tim, is I'm a psycho.
Cool.
Yeah, people love it.
What are the candlesticks called in the Jewish faith? That there's seven. Candles on that. I think.
Is it a menorah? No.
Yeah, maybe. Fuck, we're ignorant, aren't we?
We are. It is a menorah. Yes, I got it.
Nice one,
bro. Seven lamp, ancient Hebrew lampstand made of pure gold and used in the portable sanctuary set up by Moses in the wilderness and later in the temple in Jerusalem. The more you know, everybody.
Da, da, da. That's not the theme of that.
Then I fuck with candles on. You can't really have a candle on, can you? It's lit or it's off. No, it's lit or it's not lit. You can't have
I reckon that's the on-off. Those are the on-off functions of a candle. Guy, what were your power rankings of the ladies in sex? I mean, we're not even delving into this. You've revisited a subject that we had thought we had buried, and on a whim, you've grabbed a shovel and uncovered it.
Absolutely. Look, I'm not going to lie to you. There were moments of not happiness, but just like the sheer, you know, the gaudiness of this movie. It's
was it fun?
Like it's
fun. The movie you're looking for.
Parts of it were fun. There, like all the stuff around the big gay wedding is just utter madness. And even though I'm sure we unpacked it at the time, like everyone's collective obsession with the fact that the wedding is between two gay men is staggering. Like the jokes that they make, which are specific to the wedding being gay, are overwhelming. And I think that the entire reason that Stanford and Anthony got married is like it's purely. It's motivated by behind-the-scenes reasoning because I don't know if you remember this, but Sex and the City 2, there's a lot of speculation. Obviously, they've got a very excitable fan base who are sort of stalking out the set and everyone wants to know the plot beforehand for whatever reason, or maybe just the diehards do. And there was a day on set when Samantha Jones was in a wedding dress.
I weirdly remember this in the news.
And like a deliberate bait and switch so that people thought that she was getting married. And then the movie plays along for as long as they're at that flash shop where they're buying the rings. He's going, in a matter of time is a funny thing. Time isn't holding up. Time isn't after us. The same as it ever was, you know. And then they play all of Talking Heads once in a lifetime. And then they wind up inside of Bergdorf Goodman. And they say, they're all like going, I can't believe this is happening. Hell just froze over. And the implication is that Samantha Jones is getting married. Everyone's sort of giving her coy looks as though to suggest, holy shit, it's happening, everybody. Like, and everyone at home and in the cinema are going, oh my God, it's happening.
And I can see her starting a fuck clinic, but getting married?
That's right. And then they go, her best gay friend is marrying my best gay friend. And then she said, "I like, just when you think everyone's finished getting married, here come the gays." And then Samantha says, "It's like musical chairs. The music stopped and they were the last two standing." Like none of these jokes or this plot line warrant inclusion. I genuinely feel like the motivation was the PR campaign of, you know, like getting bums on seats by creating deliberate and cynical open speculation that Samantha Jones is getting married. And they're not even hanging it over the audience for long enough for it to be worthwhile. Literally burying the one interesting thread within the first 10 minutes of the movie and then making us sit through a 7-hour wedding, which was far and away the best scene in the movie. This thing really comes out with a fucking hiss and a roar.
They front load, that's for sure.
But yeah, I mean, what do you think about that theory? Because there's no, like, beyond that, as soon as that big gay wedding is over, Stanford and Anthony do not feature in this film at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of surprised at how surprised you are. This outrage feels new, it feels fresh, it feels raw to me. The emotions that you're displaying, I don't want to invalidate them at all, Guy, because you're my dude. But you've seen this movie 56 times now, I believe. So I'm just a little staggered at how you can continue to be disappointed by something that's hit you in the face so many times before. That's where old Timbo's coming from.
It's not a healthy relationship, Tim. And I guess it's couched in the brand new light of Stanford and Anthony, them bothering to have Stanford and Anthony kiss in the first movie.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I understand that you need, you know, more secondary, you know, to fill out the world. You need these characters and whatnot. But it's all like, do you know what? As I'm talking, I'm realizing I'm getting worked up over something which... Well, I feel like it's pretty much set in stone. I think these movies aren't going to get recut.
I mean, it seems redundant to say, Guy, but this is the nature of the project, isn't it? We're only 1/6 the way in, really, or a fifth, I guess.
I would say a fifth, thanks.
Don't very well.
But then, yeah, so just while we're still talking about the second movie, Big, I never picked up on this sly little homophobic dig from Big, where him and Carrie are dressing each other before the wedding, and she does his bow tie or adjusts it slightly, and he says, "Don't make me look too good." And then he goes, "Gay wedding."
Yeah.
As though that old flipping chunk of coal's going to be getting any, you know, any interest. I mean, he later does, but that's beside the point.
Here's the thing. Excuse me. Hold on. I'm a muted.
Oh, Yeah, that sounds like a
I am dying.
Situation going on there.
I do apologize for that. If I've forgotten to edit that out, I do apologize profusely for what has happened in your ear holes. Look, there's a part of me, guy, that goes, but okay, let me preface this with this. Recently, I think you and I both read this article with Sarah Jessica Parker being interviewed, and she was talking about the potential of a third movie or a continuation of the TV show. And she was like, look, you couldn't do it with the people who are in it now. It would look completely daft having these four rich white women trying to basically be bastions of social change. Like, it just wouldn't work. And I actually, when I read it, I was like, fucking SJP knows the score. And it made me reassess a little bit. When we take these digs at the things that don't hold up in the first and even the second movie, which is slightly more recent, but there's still, you know, they were made, 2006 and 2008 or something like that?
I feel like it was 8 and 10, but they're not new.
They're not new, and a lot of, you know, culturally, a lot has changed since then. And I don't want to forgive a bit of sly homophobia. I deplore homophobia, but it was a slightly different time, and those gals were doing some fucking good work on the TV series for the sisterhood. And so I just want to say,
seen the TV series?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I've seen, not like all of it. I haven't watched all of it, but I caught quite a few episodes when it was, you know, the big HBO hit.
You ever masturbated to the TV series?
Never in my life have I masturbated to the TV series. Have you masturbated to the TV series? Actually, I'm not sure.
I reckon I did once. Yeah. Okay. When I was sick, I used to be allowed to have a TV in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, whoever's scheduling program on either TV 2 or 3, Sex and the City would come on. Mm. And it was a time when there was a real premium on seeing a glimpse of breast.
Yeah.
I wasn't surrounded by these pornographic images that the teenagers seem to be bloody papering the walls with nowadays. Sure. I might have oiled up my entire body. Oof. And I might have come.
It's not good when you're sick.
What is it?
Oiling your
masturbating?
Oiling your whole body up. I feel like you'd overheat or something.
Look, I didn't actually oil
my
whole body up.
Look, I'm quite desperate to get away from this train of thought. So can I share some more thoughts that Zoe had when watching the movie?
Before you do that, I just want you to quickly, you didn't finish your power rankings. We got Samantha in the penthouse.
That's true.
Charlotte one floor
this
down.
Whole episode is dedicated to me interrupting myself trying to do the power rankings. So I reckon this week we got Charlotte in the below penthouse. I don't know what that's called. Penultimate level.
Yeah, nice.
Then we've got Miranda under her. But what I was saying before when I kicked off with the word Miranda is that they are going to be swapping levels week to week, well, day to day. We're not even watching this week to week. It's a lot more frequent. Watch to watch. Those two ladies are going to be swapping keys, passing each other in the hall, moving a lot of furniture on a constant basis to the point where they're actually reducing their wardrobes, the number of clothes that they have, because they have to move so much and they need to get efficiency in that move. So we're going to be seeing a lot of movement with Miranda and Charlotte. And Carrie has been relegated to, if I had the ability, she would be the superintendent of this building, sleeping Harry Potter style under the stairs with the brooms and the mops.
Oh, man.
There's a problem.
I hear you. That's where I feel like Carrie belongs right now. She's also in my doghouse.
Yeah, she's earned it. She just doesn't seem to help.
Do you know what?
She doesn't seem to help.
You're one of the nastiest moments in terms of her inability to empathize with her friends is... And to an extent, this is a bit of Samantha's own making, but Carrie makes out with Big, flips out, seeks advice from the girls who all sort of tell her to take it easy, have a moment. Samantha in particular is a huge advocate for sleeping on it for a night. And then Samantha goes on her date.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Did you say hooks up with Aiden?
Yeah, Aiden,
you mean, right?
I might have seen.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, yeah. I didn't know what movie you were talking about. So sweet. We're in Sex and the City 2.
Yeah.
Well, she's hooked up with her ex-boyfriend.
So Samantha goes on a date. Her and Dick Bot wind up fooling around on the beach.
Yes, boy.
And they all go down to see her. She's getting in trouble in that room. And Samantha's sort of trying to explain away by saying, we were just kissing. And this is like a pretty big and scary moment for everyone involved, really. You know, we don't know what the repercussions of this behavior are. They've sort of painted the Middle East as a place where they exist outside of cultural norms. And apart from Miranda or Professor Oak, aren't really willing to, you know, learn or abide them. And
I forgot about the Professor Oak.
Carrie just says, see, kissing is something. It's illegal.
Yeah.
It's like, this is not the fucking time for point scoring.
Yeah, they're in the room with the authorities right now. Samantha is looking at a Abu Dhabi prison cell. It's not the time.
It's not the time at all. And then they go and sit outside, and all she can talk about is Charlotte, who she also accused of being paranoid and projecting onto her. Like, remember that little snide remark she has on the lift on the way down? Anyway, look, I'm retreating old water. I'm just doing this to say, we've both got Carrie in the same apartment this week. I'd probably swap Charlotte and Miranda's spots, but otherwise you and I are seeing pretty much fucking eye to eye on this one. And now, if
I'd
love to hear Zoe's thoughts on the film.
I was just going to say, don't censor yourself, my dude, because, I mean, the whole nature of this podcast is us talking about this movie too much. This was really cute. So Zoe was, we're watching the movie at nighttime and in bed, and Zoe was pretty sleepy, and she just said, I like Charlotte's joy, which I thought was very cute.
That is nice.
She also said, this is a really inefficient way to pack during the montage of packing up Carrie's old apartment, which I think really speaks to my wife's practicality.
I hear
that. That's what I like about it.
I always think about that when Miranda tells Steve that, you know, they've got to finish the meal quickly because she's obsessed with not having time for anything. And then I'm like, and then you just take three consecutive days off to go and play dress ups.
Plus the Mexico trip after that.
Yeah.
Wait, before that, sorry. So they come back from Mexico and then they do the 3-day pack out.
No.
It's insane.
They do the pack out after.
Yes. Yeah. My bad. And then this is when I stopped writing stuff down. A quote from Zoe. It's actually a really quick movie. And then she looked at the timer, which said 45 minutes in out of 2 hours, 30 minutes. And I can understand that mentality, because it actually kicks along this movie. The pacing's not bad on it. And I think you probably would have really loved a bit of the Sex and the City 1 pacing for your watch this week, Guy. If I remember anything about Sex and the City 2, she's a slow old dog.
She's a slow burn. Look, I though would not be so brazen as your wonderful wife to accuse Sex and the City, the first movie, of moving along at a reasonable pace or clip.
She was mistaken, but you can understand where that feeling came from, you know?
Yeah, but you could say the same all the way up to the end of the wedding in the second movie. You're like, oh, wow, stuff's happening. Glitz.
It's the first scene, pretty much.
Yeah, but it drags. Well, no, it doesn't drag, but, it goes on. Well, you've fucking done a judo move on me here. Relative to the rest of the movie, stuff's happening. Yeah. You know, you've got a lot. Like Liza Minnelli's cameo is the scale and sort of spectacle of that really struck me this week. I was like, whoa, it's Liza Minnelli doing Beyonce. The idea of that existing, because previously I'd watched it, I just think of it as a gimmick for the movie. But today I thought of it as a gimmick within the wedding. And I was like, if I went to a wedding and that was like a wedding surprise that was sprung on me, I would be fucking blown away.
I've never thought about it in those terms, but you're right. If they made the kind of lead up to it a little more believable or something, if I had really entered into the world and then I'm suddenly at Stanford and Anthony's wedding, and then suddenly Liza Minnelli's there. Yeah, I'd be like, holy shit, this is the best wedding that's ever happened. This is incredible.
These guys are gone and
I actually
done.
Think they do themselves a disservice with the, how do you say, like the decor, the decorating of the whole thing. Because the whole thing is so fantasy, dreamlike, dripping in wealth and that kind of snow white. What are those crystals called? Swarovski.
Yes, something like that.
You know, the swans on there. Yeah, yeah, those. It's kind of, it's like that. It's like very, it's too much. It's too big. It's too shiny. It's too much. And it kind of takes you out of the reality of it. But if they'd leaned a bit more into like, maybe if it was a little more traditional wedding in a church or something, and then Liza Minnelli's there, like up with the church choir, that'd be fucking shit hot. I'd be well into that.
I can see what you're saying here. I'm wary that we're going to run out of time, Tim, so I'd just like to quickly check in on your shining light this week.
Shining light.
Shining the light.
Wrapped up like a deuce. It was definitely having another person watching the film with me, but within the world of the movie, Oh, do you know who I really enjoyed? It was the waitress who comes to serve Charlotte when she's in the same cafe with Big, not the one who seats her, who says, "You look glowing," or "beautiful." I think she says glowing, when she asks how pregnant she is, but the one who comes to take your order after that. And I think she's been in some things. She's got a familiar face, but I liked what she did with the place.
Who was it? Sorry, can you?
So, you know, she's there and those people get out of the way. So she has a vantage point to see Big sitting there. And then Charlotte starts freaking out because she doesn't want to be in the same room with Big after she's jilted Carrie.
Yeah.
So she makes a big ruckus. So the waitress comes to take your order, and she says, "Can I get you something to get started," or something to that effect. And Charlotte says, no, I can't be here. I've got to get out of here. Help me move this table." That waitress I liked this week.
Okay.
She's blonde. She's short. She's got huge eyes. She's cool. Got a good energy.
I love that.
Do you remember who I'm talking about now?
Yeah. I do remember quite. I was thinking, I'd like, you know, if that was my server, I'd be happy. I always try too hard with servers, though.
Yeah.
I think because I used to.
It's where you go to make friends.
Yeah, I used to work as one. And so I think I overcompensate for being the customer and make their life hell on earth. My shining light was, do you know, it was actually really fun to see Runkle work his magic in ADR once more. You'll remember Charlotte is paranoid about Erin, the nanny, and to feed her paranoia at one point she goes to check on, I think Rose is having a bath, and Runkle and Erin are bathing her, and you don't see him saying it, but you hear him saying to Rose, because she's playing with stuff in the bath, he goes, "What does this do here? What is this? What is that going to do?" And then at that point, that's when he takes out the sort of shower head, which is in the bath, and it sprays all over Erin's top. And he goes, "What's that going to do? Whoop!" And it really fucking got me going.
I paid special attention and really pricked my ears up to hear, "There's nothing like an illegal Cuban cigar after dinner." On this watch as well, and I really enjoyed that bit of ADR from Runkle as well. Runkle's undefeatable. He is indefatigable. He's the greatest.
He's living on a rooftop garden above Samantha.
He is in a hot air balloon looking down on all of them.
I hear that.
I love Runkle. And the reason why Runkle wins is because Runkle loves life. And I think that's an important lesson for all of us.
What a beautiful note to end on. Tim, it has been hell on earth the last 3 hours of my life, but I couldn't imagine anyone I'd rather spend it with than you via Remote Connect.
Hey, let's do it all again in, I'm estimating, 36 hours or so.
Sounds bad to me.
Bye.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.